thanks for tuning in to the Undercuts review of the 2024 Mexican Grand Prix. Please rate, review, and subscribe wherever you listen, and enjoy the show.
By being a racing driver, you are under risk all the time. By being a racing driver means you are racing with other people. And if you no longer go for a gap that exists, you're no longer a racing driver.
All right, so we are here for the 2024 Mexican Grand Prix. There's always lots of talk about Checo coming into this race, obviously, his home race weekend, and it has been a struggle of a season all the way through. So he's obviously going to hope that this can be the turnaround moment so that he can
expecting big things of Checo in the Mexican Grand Prix.
That's what he's hoping for. But we did have action pretty much the whole weekend, all the way through. I mean, crashes in both FP1 and FP2. In FP1, Albon was on a hot lap, and Ollie, who is filling in for, I guess, Charles? He was filling in
Charles
for Charles.
Yeah.
There are lots of guys filling in, I guess, because they need to have one in each car by the end of the season, and everyone that's left it until the last few races are filling those spots in. But yeah, Ollie had slowed down as Albon was coming through, and he lost control of the car and crashed pretty heavily into the wall. He was okay, but it was a nasty accident, especially for practice.
Yeah, it was a weird one. I just saw the clips. I didn't watch the practice session itself, but saw like some of the views of it. Albon said it was Behrman, and Behrman didn't really seem to do much wrong. I don't know.
It was just one of those poor timing.
I think it was just where he came up, just lost a bit, you know, got in a bit of dirty air going around the corner, lost the back end a little bit, corrected, and it just took him into the side. It was kind of, a bit weird. But you missed, like, you went straight to the on-track action, and I don't know whether it was Thursday afternoon or Friday morning before FP1, there was a big meeting with the drivers. Did you hear about this? To talk about the racing guidelines and what it means to be able to overtake someone around the outside. Now, the FIA have gone away, and they're going to provide some revised guidelines by Qatar. So when they come into the Qatar weekend, because basically 19 drivers complained to FIA, I don't know whether it was to the FIA or to F1, that it's really not cool for someone to let off the brakes to make sure that they get to the apex first and take away an opportunity that someone has to overtake them on the outside. I don't know who the 20th driver was, but the other 19 were pretty unanimous. And so there was a meeting, they talked about it, and the FIA committed to going away and taking a look at the guidelines based on the input from all of the drivers. So that was something that happened before the on-track action this weekend.
So 19 drivers, not 18 drivers, but 19 drivers?
Actually, it could have been eight. It could actually have been, I was making the number up, but it made for a good stat. Right?
So it would just be interesting.
Maybe 17 drivers. I don't know.
Russell said it was 19 out of 20.
But it was basically everyone except Max, and there were maybe three abstentions.
Yeah.
Well, it sucks because in Formula One, like, no matter what rule you put in place, they're going to find the loophole or whatever and exploit it. And
oh no,
so it puts,
totally agree.
Well, yeah, it puts everybody in
Max
situation
is the best
where you can never have a fair rule without just punishing everybody till a point where racing kind of becomes, you know, either bad or whatever. It's just kind of silly, whatever they have to manage. Because the rule right now in place, I mostly agree with it. Like, you know, if you're alongside, you got to leave space. But then, right, then they're just going to try to get to the apex first, no matter what, drive off the track.
And say Max is the guy who exploits it to the most because he knows everything inside out, and he knows exactly what he needs to do to get to the very edge of what is permissible. And what he did in Austin was permissible. But when you actually look at it factually from a racing ethical perspective, everyone except Max kind of realizes it's wrong. Max probably too. But yeah. I wasn't on last week's podcast, so I can't.
I don't know if
about
he has
it.
The words wrong in his mind.
I think I came across. You have to re-listen to the pod. I think I was defending the decisions from the stewards to some degree.
I was not
talking chase.
These are the rules. You've worked for the Germans far too long, Martin. These are the rules.
he left the track. He gained an advantage.
Anyway, so yeah, Mark, so that's Mark, that, you, that was something.
You might want to move your microphone a bit closer. You're a bit quiet. I don't know. If
okay.
If it's I'll far away.
I can also turn it up in editing.
Oh, okay.
Well.
In sounds post. Cool. Okay. Maybe it's just my old ears.
But yeah, and it's a little bit of foreshadowing on, I guess, what will happen in the race as well. This is not the end of this story here, but that was actually the second red flag for the first session. There was one for debris on track as well, but then in FP2, George crashed out early as well. And it was a 90-minute FP2 because I guess they were testing out a tire that they're going to use maybe next year or in the future or whatever, but they got extra 2025 time on track.
They were comparing it for this year's tire versus last year's. And I think it was just like the first hour was just straight up. They told them, this is how much fuel, this is how many laps, this is what tire. I think it was pretty much right. They didn't have any choice in what they were doing.
Yeah, so, I mean, free practice is a good spot for that, right? The cars are on track anyway. You want to use it for something meaningful. I get why they do it. And I think it's okay. Yeah. Unfortunately for George, who binned his car for the second weekend running, meant that, I don't know, maybe he didn't have all the parts.
Yeah, he lost all
of the upgrades.
Yeah.
that maybe Lewis had. So that put him on the back foot in terms of the Mercedes duo for the weekend.
It didn't look like it was the tires that caused the crash for him, though. I think it was that they were just bottoming out through those high speeds and he just lost aero. And I mean, it was pretty spectacular.
I didn't actually see it, but yeah, I mean, I saw the car afterwards and it was misshapen.
Yes. but yeah, so that was it for the practices. On to qualifying, and obviously Checo once again not able to get out of Q1 along with Oscar, which was a huge surprise. You know, the McLarens didn't look fantastic through the practice sessions, but being out in Q1 was a big shock there. And then just poor Checo, just can't put anything together, even at his home race, all the anticipation and just another Q1 exit. It's awful.
I mean, not surprising though. He's been pretty bad for what, since race 7, I think this year, he's not really done much.
That's generous. Yeah.
And that was with an outstanding car. And now they have a car that's struggling heavily. And yeah,
I mean, he's had that one relatively bright spot in Baku where he was competitive, but then came together with Sainz when he had a whole bunch of track to his left that he could have just moved into. So I don't know, just based on his qualifying performance on Saturday, things were not looking too great for Checo for the weekend, starting 18th, 19th. I don't know exactly where he started in the end, but it was way down there, which is really not where he or Red Bull want him to be.
No. Especially with all the talk coming into this weekend, with already they're talking about Liam Lawson taking the second Red Bull seat next year, which is insane to me. I don't know how they're not looking at Yuki for the seat next year. It's baffling to me. I don't understand. Liam seems like a really, really great driver, but putting him in there that fast when you've got Yuki, who's dominated his teammate all season long, it just doesn't make sense to me.
I don't know. They just got something against Yuki. I don't know. Maybe it's his temperament and they don't want someone as fiery of a temperament alongside Max. They want someone who's maybe a little bit more malleable or controllable, I guess.
Lawson doesn't seem too, I mean, he's not Yuki, but he seems pretty much, you know, ready to do what he wants to do or needs to do.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's not a bad guess.
But at the same time, it's like, we're putting you in the big team. Keep your trap shut for a while. Is goes over a little bit more easily with someone who's, you know, really, well, returning to the sport after having had a good few races last year, coming in this year. But it's a good test for him, you know, go up against Yuki and do what you need to do against Yuki and earn it.
Yeah. I mean, we'll see how that goes, but the bright spot during qualifying, Carlos taking, in his words, a bittersweet pole in Mexico, just really trying to show everyone at Ferrari that they made a mistake, and he is really in good form. I mean, the whole team is in amazing form right now. Lewis must be thrilled with the decision that he's made, but Carlos with an unbelievable pole.
He was on top of it. Both laps in Q3 were good enough for pole. No one came close.
That was the whole weekend, though. I mean, Charles had a rough weekend with not being in free practice one, and then his car gets crashed in, and then I think something happened in FP2 as well. So he just was kind of on the back foot the whole weekend. But every single time Leclerc would set a lap, Carlos would be a tenth quicker, like whether it was practice or qualifying. So it was just, you know, he had a good build up to the week. And I listened to Peter Windsor's little snippets after the races, and he was talking about how, you know, Carlos was just so beautiful and, you know, all the things that you would imagine to say, and which are all true. At the same time, like, I don't know why people get so surprised. Like, Carlos is a really good driver. He should win every once in a while. He should take pole every once in a while. Like, it's not a complete surprise. It does stink that he's leaving, or not leaving, but getting booted.
Yeah, and I think in the race simulation in FP2, Charles was apparently the quicker of the two. So it was always going to be interesting on how it was going to shake out in the race with those two. But Carlos had the pace this weekend, definitely. And I think I even heard last weekend him talking about Mexico being a good opportunity for him to get a race win while he's still at Ferrari. So I think going in, he was super motivated, whether it's the track characteristics or whatever, or whether it's, I've not looked back and seen how he's fared the last few years there, but he just seemed like he was super confident heading into this weekend. And, you know, straight from qualifying, it was really, really clear that he was the man to beat.
And then Max ended up being next to him on the front row, and Lando and Charles right behind them. So I guess at this point, the three contender shots, not that Charles is necessarily really that in the fight, but, you know, not that far away, I guess. And I guess both the Mercedes behind them. Great qualifying sessions from Kevin and Pierre and Albon and Nico, all in the top 10. Really great.
The Haases, really, like in qualifying, the Haases were really looking pretty strong.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, they'd been doing good the last
few races.
Yeah, but they, based on qualifying form, they'd hopped Aston Martin, hopped Williams.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, for my local F1 team, it's really cool.
Well, they've always been strong at quali, even last year. It's just the race pace was always that suffered. What was interesting, though, is suddenly Magnussen is up there. Yeah. Like, it was always just Hulk. And now suddenly Magnussen is like, beat him, right? I think he qualified above him.
Yeah, so, by a few spots.
That was pretty cool.
Yeah, P7, I think.
Yeah. And I think Kevin is the only guy officially that we know is not coming back next year, unless he somehow gets a seat at another team. But
there's only one seat left, and I don't think he's even in the discussion on it.
No.
But yeah, so I think at this point, I mean, what was it? When he came back after his ban, we were joking about 007, like zero. Zero penalty points, zero fucks given, seven races left. And, you know, we've not seen him kind of get his elbows out. But I think, you know, he's only now, including this one, got five races left. I think he sees that, you know, it's really, now that there's been this break going through Austin and onwards through the last six races, I think he's just now realized that, you know, this is it. Just go out there. Show that whatever, no pressure's on, just get it done. And he's driving uninhibited, and I think that that's really shining through in some of his performances. So got in.
I don't think VCarb have announced their second driver yet, though, have they? Yuki's in one, but...
No, I guess not.
It's Liam Lawson, surely, because Checo's been announced already in the second race.
Oh, he's got a two-year contract.
Poor old Checo, can't catch
he
a
He was
break.
Renewed, like, 3 days into the season as motivation to do better.
But there's no, what does it say, without smoke, there's fire or something like that, but... Doesn't matter what Perez has in his hands, everybody keeps questioning him, right? Whether he...
Yeah. Yeah. Do you think that if Liam were to get the seat, that they would even bother with putting Checo in?
No, he'll be done.
They'll just have him as a reserve driver or just pay him off and say,
they'll say,
see
thank
you, later.
You, bye. They'll pay him off.
Wow.
Just like that, just like Red, McLaren did with Danny Ric. Like he's under contract, but you don't need to show up to work. This guy's got your car. Wow. Now, who'd go into the VCarb is a very good question. Obviously, there's Isaac Hadjar, who's in F2. Yeah. He's been doing really pretty well. Granted, F2, the order of things is really, really messed up because some teams have gotten to grips with the new car and others really haven't. Franco Colapinto in the F2 order, not really up there. Like sixth or seventh, I don't know exactly. But you look at what he's done in the F1 car in Williams since he came in, and you kind of question... Is it very nuanced, the F2 car, and should you really pay attention to who's at the front of the field? Speaking of Franco Colapinto, obviously he's a Williams guy, but when you look at what he's done, could Red Bull look outside of their family and just say, sorry, Isaac, you know, maybe we want to give you another year to see if you're actually that good, and give a seat to Colapinto? I don't know. It's they've announced their second driver, but that seat's still up for grabs.
Yeah. I think Franco is the most likely person to fit into that spot. I mean, they took Nyck de Vries. He was never a Red Bull guy, right? He was a Mercedes guy through and through, and then they brought him into VCarb. But yeah, it'll be interesting.
But that didn't work out. But no, that was a one race nuance, Monza, Williams, which was notoriously slippery at the time. He could still get the other Sauber seat. I don't know. I think that Franco's done a really awesome job. Really, really great. And I'd like to see him land somewhere.
Yeah. I mean, talk about earning it.
Yeah. Take your chance when it's presented, because you never know if you're going to get a second one.
Yeah, absolutely. And that'll be fascinating to see how that turns out over the next few weeks. But on to the pre-race stuff. I don't know if they weren't doing it for the whole weekend, but I only noticed it before the race, but that they had the mariachi version of the F1 song back. So that's always
they
fantastic.
Did it when they were showing the grid order, right? They didn't do it on the intro, but when they were showing how people were lined up on the grid, it was on then, because my little guy was next to me. I was like, listen to the song. Because he knows the song, obviously, and it's like, that's weird. It's like, yes, Mexican. I love it. I think it's amazing.
Me too. I'm so glad they keep it for the whole year. It's the best one.
I gotta go listen to it. I didn't hear it.
but you remember it from last year?
I don't know if I do. I must.
Oh, we've got to send it to you. Oh, it's awesome.
It's just got like the mariachi horns and the guitar instead of the normal whatever they have on. It's great. So yeah, that was awesome. Ocon, I didn't hear why, but he did end up starting from the pit lane. He ended up qualifying P19, so dropping behind Zhou is not really losing out too much. So not a bad decision there. They probably just took brand new parts, and pretty much everyone started on medium tires except for a few guys in the back. I guess Checo was really the only one from the main teams that started on mediums. Hards.
Everybody down to Stroll was on medium, and then Colapinto down was on hards.
That's it for the pre-race stuff. Max had another great start off the line. Carlos not fantastic, but it got a little, as you Brits say, argy-bargy between the two of them. Carlos cutting the corner and was able to take the lead, but ultimately gave it back on the next straight, but getting right into the racing right away between those two. But really, we saw Yuki spinning by the camera into the wall, into
what a shot
into turn one.
Did you see the pictures focusing on the camera guy
with
Yuki going by? Mm-hmm. His rear wing must have passed an inch, maybe two, below the guy's camera. Because when it came through, I was like, holy crap, that guy, he stayed with it.
Yeah, he did.
It was mental.
It all happened so fast, right? I don't know what his reaction.
Yeah, maybe he didn't know.
But, he didn't know.
I don't think those cameras I jumped away from the slow TV. Motion.
I can't believe he didn't take out like five cars. Like in that seriously. Situation, it's unbelievable that only him and Albon were involved in that.
Yeah,
but poor Albon.
I mean, because was it Gasly that was coming across? Did you see in car from Albon's car? It was, the door was closing. Those two guys were coming together, and he had to back out of it.
It was a matter of a few inches, like either way. And Yuki just didn't have to brake because there was nobody technically in front of him. But then with Albon moving to the left slightly, it just interwove the wheels and the speed differential with Yuki still going, you know, faster into the corner because he had the space, just destroyed both cars. Yeah. Took him out. So, and I think as Brundle said, I'm surprised it doesn't happen more often. But luckily everybody was okay, including bystanders. Yeah.
Yeah. And then unfortunately we heard, unfortunately for Checo, making an already bad weekend even worse, he started way forward in the box and got a 5-second penalty for that. I mean, he was way off. It wasn't even close.
I didn't actually see how he lined up, but I hear it was, you know, he was like really far ahead. And when they came over the radio and said, we're being investigated for a false start, he's like, no, it was really good start. Did you hear that? His reaction was great. But the thing is, though, he was about 3 feet further forward than he really should have been.
Yeah, looking at his reaction time, it didn't look like a false start, but I didn't. Yeah, where he was on the track was not legal.
Yeah. I mean, that's just amateur, right? I mean, he's just off in everything. He's not even lining up right. I mean, it's bad. Starting to feel badly for him. But starting out from the back with a 5-second penalty. And that brings out a safety car. Obviously, the crash, they had to clean everything up. It ultimately came back in the end of lap six. So they're racing on lap seven. Max has another great jump, but Carlos is able to stay fairly close behind him, get the slipstream up to turn one. He doesn't make a pass on this first lap, but on lap nine, he was able to take the lead into turn one. Max was fighting back through the slow corners, but Carlos took the inside line, went over the curb, but was able to keep the lead through the DRS zones and start pulling away a little bit. But then you immediately hear Max complain about what mode they're in and how his battery is getting drained and just
he was complaining there. He didn't have he didn't have charge in his battery to sort of fight back. I don't know. I still go back to what I was saying last week, which is Max's fight is with Lando, not with the Ferraris. Like, he's not going to... I didn't think he fought that hard. Maybe he honestly couldn't, but there was plenty of space for, you know, Sainz to go up the inside. And then right after that turn, there's another DRS zone that's still good for Sainz. And so that helped him, like, keep the lead.
Yeah, it's a single detection zone for two
straights,
DRS
zones. But good move. And yeah, good move by Sainz and kept it on the track. But yeah, I think Max lived to fight another day. There was his plan.
It wasn't Lando. I thought at first Max was just giving him the lead, thinking what you're saying, Martin, that he was just like, you know what? Let me not fight. Let me just make sure I stay ahead of Lando. That's I thought right. he gave it up. But then when they showed the replay, I'm like, oh no, he just totally sent it, and Max had no clue it was coming. It was an outstanding move.
Yeah. I don't, Martin, you were giving Max a lot of credit last week, thinking that he's thinking this through. I don't think he does that. I really don't. I don't think any part of him is thinking, I'm going to let anyone get by me. I'm going to try and make it difficult for
anyone. He doesn't like that papaya coming by him. I can tell you that much.
That's true. He certainly doesn't, because on the very next lap, Lando looked like he should be able to get by Max into turn one, but Max forces him wide. And then later on the lap, even worse, like we were saying, Max just doesn't even brake, doesn't even try and brake, and just they both go off the track.
I wish you were live streaming yourself watching the race, Jason. I would have loved to see you.
I was not happy.
Well,
I was
the not kid's going to learn some new. The kid's going to learn some new swear words. Probably he's doing it again, or something like that. Was probably
no, so right. This on this one, I think. Well, put it this way, Max made a better go at getting round the corner. I think it was actually a lot closer to being. This is where I think the ahead at the apex thing actually came in and saved Lando a little bit, because I think at that point Lando was actually still ahead.
Right? Lando was definitely ahead both of those apexes, I think.
Yeah. Well, he was definitely ahead on the entry.
Yeah. Oh, sure. But, yeah.
But then at the apex, given how Max comes off brakes and all of that sort of stuff, I think it was a little bit closer. But needless to say, Lando was still ahead at the apex, which meant that when Max ran Lando out of room, he'd forced him off the track. Because he was entitled to racing room by virtue of.
Are you talking about the first corner or the second?
On turn four. This is on turn four.
The first incident.
Yes. The first incident. And so, it was relatively close, but you know, if they were gonna penalize Lando in Austin, they had to penalize Max for that one. When it got to turn eight, he braked 60 meters later.
He did he even brake?
I was gonna say I didn't think he broke.
Yeah, so Lando couldn't even turn in.
No, he braked 60 meters later, so he had absolutely zero intention of making that turn.
Yeah.
Another pass where I literally thought, I'm like, oh, I guess Lando's letting him by for some reason. No.
Well, because it looked like it. No, but it was because he
knew better.
Break. Right.
He didn't break. Yeah. I mean, but so, that goes back to my point, is that he doesn't want Lando to get by him. And if Lando turned left and crashed into him, I think Max would be perfectly happy with that. I don't think he'd have an issue. He would have been fine.
That was the goal.
But then also, so he could have just given the place back, but he didn't. Yeah. Max could have given the place back and not gotten that second penalty. However, at that point, he knew he was getting a penalty. And so his objective then was to disadvantage Lando and not let him by, hold him up, because he knew that with Carlos in front and Charles in front of him, Charles would back him up and let Carlos go into the lead. And then if he backed Lando up, it would mean that Lando had much less of a chance to be able to make up the ground on a single pit stop to Carlos by the end.
And the point differentials as you start dropping down the places get less and less. Yeah. I completely agree with you, Nick. Jason isn't just a racer, Max. But he is thinking big
picture. He's so smart. He's smart in an evil genius kind of way.
Yeah.
Right? Emphasis. He knows on what he needs to do, and he is evil, but a genius nonetheless.
And there's no Piastri there to help, right? He was out of it, unfortunately. No. So
yeah, the only person that had a rear gunner was the Ferrari with the Ferrari team, who were in front by virtue of the fact that he ran Lando off the road, gave Charles the chance to get ahead of both of them. And at that point, it was locked in. But one thing I did want to point out, going back to when Carlos got past Verstappen, did you see? So he got round in turn one, but then he was almost cutting the corner on turn two. and it realized
was, it was super close.
Correct. And when he showed you the in car, he was turning left to go through turn two and then turned right to make sure that he kept at least one wheel on the right side of the white line. It was just like, you could see he'd be like, yeah, he got by. Oh, crap. You know, like realize that he didn't want to get that as a, I mean, that would have just been a strike for track limits, but who's to say that further down the line, it wouldn't have come back to him. But that was kind of a,
Well, you don't want to go in off track gaining an advantage kind of.
That's right. Even though the pass had already been made. And so he wouldn't have really gotten an advantage for it, but it would have counted in his three strikes, four strikes, however many you get. So.
But yeah, so after all of that, obviously, both the Ferraris now ahead of Max and Lando. So they, I mean, they had a good 2 or 3 second lead over those two by the time it was starting to settle down a bit. But we did get a battle between the Mercedes. We did get a battle between the Mercedes into turn one. Lewis was defending hard, but George was able to get ahead eventually. But the Mercs are going hard.
They were definitely going hard. I mean, that Lewis left it very late to move to his right, I think it was, to defend the inside lane. And George went around the outside, but they weren't giving each other any, you know, there was no team orders there for sure. They were driving hard. Could have been a lot worse. But yeah, good racing from the two of them.
Yeah. And then I guess we heard Alonso retired from the race. I didn't hear what officially happened. But something broke and he was out of the race.
I think it was a brakes issue, but I don't exactly know. There's a lot made of this weekend for Fernando being his 400th race weekend.
Yeah.
But it's his 400th race weekend, but he hasn't competed in 400 races because he, I guess, didn't qualify or didn't start for some of them. But Qatar is apparently his first, so his 400th actual race. I don't know when it was, but that was what the Twitter sphere was talking about. However, at the end of this race, I was just writing this down, even though he didn't complete the race distance, Fernando Alonso has now completed 21,593 racing laps in F1. Jeez, and Lewis is a little behind him, but this race also took Lewis over the 20,000 mark. 20,061.
So that's crazy. They were talking about how all these old drivers that have won multiple championships, like I think Jackie Stewart had raced in like 73 total races in his whole entire F1 career, and he's had 3 world championships. But you've got Alonso, who's raced in now 400 and only has 2. It's crazy.
Must mean he's terrible.
Yeah. Where are we at now? So lap 18, we saw Liam and Checo going side by side through those tight, slow speed corners. Liam was able to keep Checo behind for quite a while. Checo almost ended up getting passed by Lance as well, but then he ends up pushing him off track in order to keep P11. But, I mean, Checo was having a good race, not thinking about the five-second penalty, but he's up 7 spots on 18 laps. I mean, that's pretty impressive.
If only he'd started in his pit box, his weekend would have looked really great up until this point.
Yeah,
but with these classes,
start from the back every race. He's he's
fighting hard every season. These back markers, though, right? He's not like slicing them up, you know, and making his way through the field.
I mean, he really should not be battling with RB VCarb.
Yeah,
and I did see.
Or with the pit box.
I don't want really a quote or something attributed to Checo saying about Liam that, you know, he doesn't respect the senior drivers and all this sort of stuff. And it's like, dude, you're either an F1 driver or you're not, right?
Yeah.
There's no senior, like, if you're a world champion, yes, you deserve just that little bit more respect than regular race, regular F1 drivers. But just because you've been in midfield cars and found your way into the best car, and in the best car you're competing with the midfield, doesn't mean that you need to be given any kind of quarter from a young guy who's really coming in and really got his eyes on your seat, right?
So, and this is Checo. This is Checo.
Who's he talking about?
Him, Magnussen, like two of the headhunters of Formula One for their entire careers. Like,
yeah,
I can't stand when any of them complain like that, because they're all the same way. But when you hear Checo or Magnussen or any of these guys, that's how they made their career, to be known as that guy that just is always going to force you off or get the elbows out, and they're complaining, it just drives me nuts.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I mean, Checo's had so many issues with plenty of teammates. So, yeah, very, very strange from him. And it's not even his teammate. So,
well, it's the guy taking his spot.
Yeah, yeah. Moving on from there, it looks like Checo had gotten some damage potentially from that battle on his front wing. So he ends up coming in to pit much earlier than expected, and especially because he started on hard tires. So pitting really early onto the mediums and with a front wing change. So he drops all the way to the back. But then it took a while, but lap 25, Lando is now back in DRS range of Max, but he's not quite close enough to make a move. And then ultimately, a few laps later, Max comes in to pit for his stop. And it was obviously the longest time I've ever seen a car sit in the pit lane with nobody touching it. I mean, 20 seconds feels a lot longer than 20 seconds when you're watching it in that span of time.
I mean, is there a part of the sporting regs that say if you have a pit stop and you have a time penalty that you have to serve it on the pit stop, or can you choose to do a normal pit stop? Oh, yeah, you have to serve it?
You have to serve it the next pit stop.
Or else you get another penalty.
So if you don't do any more pit stops, they'll add it to your time at the end of the race. But if you have a pit stop, you've got to serve it? Okay, fair enough. Because I was just thinking, if you could easily lose more time just by waiting, you know, getting everybody to move.
Yeah, because you'll always have that, because you can't touch the car for, say, 5 seconds, 10 seconds, in this case 20. But there's always human reaction time and a little bit of buffer so that you don't mess it up. But the penalty is you have to serve the time at your next pit stop. But if there is no pit stop, it gets time added at the end of the race. Yeah.
I guess that makes it better, because then you're racing on track. Then you're in your correct position when you're back out on track. You're not
also trying to intentionally screw over somebody else. Like, he could have tried to stay in front of Lando for the whole race just to keep pushing him back or something.
Yeah,
I'm kind of surprised that they pitted when they did and didn't just try and hold him up longer. But maybe they were still trying to do something out of the race anyway. But you're not allowed to work on the car. And that, based on recent precedent, means that you can't touch the car. So in Max's pit stop, they brought the fan out and were blowing air into the overhead.
They did do that whilst the 20 seconds was counting,
While it was counting, but they didn't touch the car. So technically, they weren't working on the car.
Ooh. I wonder if somebody's going to come up with some new, like, magnetic bolts or something that they could, like, adjust without touching the car. You know, just bring it in close. Like, we're not touching it. Just like you and your brother. In the back seat of the car.
I'm not touching you.
Or after someone's gone in on a sliding challenge in football, soccer. And they all kind of stand up and say, no, ref, didn't touch
him. Yeah, didn't touch him. See, how can we do things to the car without touching the car?
But in reality, if they hadn't put, because I mean, cars stay stationary for a while sometimes, like when they're waiting to go out of the pits at the end of the pit lane, or they're on the start line on the grid, but they've never really from a full race.
Oh yeah, no, yeah,
the engine temperatures, all that sort of stuff. So. Yeah, you can't really say no, you can't blow the fan in there, because what if he sat there and his engine just kind of gave up? And it would have been awesome.
Great.
But but it wouldn't really have been fair.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
I don't think anybody was complaining about that, though, were they? Nobody saying, oh, they...
No, just the Twitterverse of people who hate Max. Wow. And that's what my Twitter feed seems to be at the moment, people that hate Max. Maybe I've been liking too many Lando or Lewis posts, but I don't know. But yeah, it was. I think that fit within the sporting regs, I think.
Yeah. But yeah, once Max got out of the way of Lando, so to speak, he started gaining time on the Ferraris fairly easily. He had, 7 seconds on the 29th lap to catch up in order to catch Charles in P2. But a couple laps later, he comes in for his first stop. He only fell one spot behind George, who ended up pitting on the next lap anyway with Charles as well.
I think when Lando pitted, he had about 6.8 seconds to Charles, and then Charles was about 6.5-ish behind Carlos. He let Carlos go out and build that. So it's about a 12 to 13 second gap from Lando to Carlos at that point.
Yeah. And then Carlos ended up pitting on the lap after that. So all the leaders essentially were in at this point. Let's see. Oscar was still out on his starting mediums from, I think he ended up starting P18 ultimately. So he's battling with Liam. With Lewis right behind them on fresh tires. But Oscar ultimately was able to pass Liam and then gain a little bit of time before Lewis was able to make that pass. But it didn't take long for Lewis to catch up to Oscar. Let's see. Max is moving back up the field on lap 36. He gets by Franco, who is still out on his hard tires that he started on. So Max already back into P8. Max just moving up, gets by Liam just a couple laps after that. And then lap 41, finally Oscar and Liam come in. So that just leaves Franco, Bottas, and Ocon. Although Franco is the only one near the top 10 at this point. I guess Bottas was too. But still on their original tires. Let's see. So lap 44, Lando is now less than 5 seconds behind Charles, but not making up time that we're used to him seeing. But we've spoken recently about how the McLarens of late have been staying out longer on their first stints that they have the fresh tires towards the end of the race, but they were the first ones to pit here, and they're not gaining that time as fast as they have been in past races.
Yeah, it was interesting there that, like, in the earlier phase after the stop, so at this point, 44, so they're about 10, 12 laps in, and it was really pretty evenly matched at that point. But it was really at this point, I think, where the tire, even though they got onto the hard at a similar sort of time within just a couple of laps of one another, that the tire came to the McLaren in a way that it didn't come to the Ferrari, or maybe the Ferrari had got, you know, had seen the best of its tires and McLaren was prolonging the life. But this was the phase of the race where Lando started making a bit more of an inroad towards Charles, right?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Which is, I would say, for the Ferrari, their car is obviously looking much stronger, but, you know, it wasn't that long ago that everybody was amazed at how good the McLaren was on tire management. So the fact that Ferrari is hanging in even remotely close to what they're doing, especially at a track like Mexico, obviously there's a lot of good signs with Ferrari's car right now. But yeah, I thought that was one of the standout points for their car, that they were holding that gap.
Yeah, because you go back last season to an extent, but certainly the year before Fred came in, I think Fred basically came in and said, we need to be better on our tires, because just like we talked about Haas being better through the races, they were just destroying their tires. Ferrari were also, that was where they were losing out. It was really on the tire deg. And it's all well and good being fast. You know, last season, how many poles did Charles get? But you put him in a race and they were going backwards because the tire wear on the Ferrari, they just couldn't compete, which also always put him at a disadvantage. But it definitely, Mark, yeah, you're right. They are much, much better on their tires now. And they're getting a car that is probably at the moment the fastest car. And yeah.
I guess the only thing I'll throw in is that it did seem like being in traffic really affected the tire wear. Because look at the difference between Charles and Carlos. And I know Carlos was relatively quicker this week, but there was a pretty big differential in time. And I think a lot of that just came down to the fronts getting abused in the dirty air. So Lando could have been dealing with that, you know. But yeah. All the same, Ferrari's car is looking strong.
Yeah. And then we heard, of course, they always single out George as the driver that they highlight when they talk about potential raindrops coming in and how he sees raindrops on his visor. And they just always go back to him. Did you check that you're sweating or whatever?
Yeah, he's never going to live that one down, is he?
It's on the inside, George.
Oh, George.
But nothing ever came of the rain anyway. So maybe it was just more sweat. Maybe he just sweats a lot and just doesn't know the difference.
Maybe he's crying. I don't know.
Maybe.
It's like, is it raining?
But yeah, that was funny. We love George. Yeah. George is great. But Lando takes back-to-back fastest laps, lap 47 and 48. Still gaining time, probably, you know, at my brain at this moment's like, it doesn't seem like it's probably not going to be enough to catch the front, but definitely a good shot at getting to Charles.
Continue the conversation on pine-sports.com. That's pine-sports.com and the Pine Sports Discord, which you can find linked on the website. And join us in a one-of-a-kind fantasy Formula One contest at coopsf1.com. That's COOPSF1.com, where you can put your theories to the test.
Lap 52, Franco finally comes in for his first stop. And then he takes the fastest lap away from Lando on the fresh medium tires on his first hot lap after he comes out, which could be important towards the end of the season. Lap 56 now. So Lando still only 4 seconds back of Charles, just not catching the time like we're used to him seeing. And let's see, Oscar is now able to take P8 from Nico on that lap as well. A really impressive drive from Oscar from where he started up into P8. That was really, really great. And that's really all we see from him. Lando now on lap 62 is in DRS range with 10 laps to go. And then takes the fastest lap back from Franco on that lap as well. And then coming out of the last corner on that lap, Charles loses it a little bit, goes way wide, somehow keeps it out of the wall, able to keep the car straight, but he loses P2 to Lando.
That was brutal. When we were watching it, it showed the overhead view of that. It was absolutely perfect because you could really see how it moved. You know, often depending on the angle, you don't really see how much it lost. Should they lose it? Shaw was, his reflexes to keep that car out of the wall were immense. That it was, I guess he just was trying to put it on the gas slightly too early. I don't know, but man, that was what we call a tank slapper. Like at a motorbike racing, like you hit the gas tank because you're completely sideways. And I thought Charles was out of the race, but he kept it. He ran wide, but he kept it on the straight and narrow and managed to keep it out of the wall. It was just the skill there was probably not as evident to many people, but it was, I don't know how he kept it out of the wall.
It was amazing reflexes. These guys are good.
Yeah,
these guys are good.
But it just meant that the overtake was a little easier than Lando maybe anticipated.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, you know, to be fair, though, it was the fact that Charles was pushing like that and maybe got on the gas too hard, too early, was because of where Lando was. Lando was legit going to have a shot into that first corner to take the lead anyway. You know, he didn't have to make that move. The move just happened for him.
Could have been a lot worse if Lando was alongside when he lost it like that. Could have taken Lando out, right? Who knows what could have happened. So,
but it also made me feel optimistic that he didn't have to make the pass. So maybe there was a tiny shot he could catch up to Carlos.
Right. Yeah.
He didn't use up his tires.
Exactly.
Trying to get by. Yeah.
Yeah. And then Lando ends up taking another fastest lap after that and only has 8 seconds ahead to Carlos. But, I mean, it's, what, 7 or 8 laps left to go. So he would have to do a second a lap and pass him in order to take the lead of the race. But then we see Franco and Liam battling out, and Liam ends up getting damage to his front wing, and he has to come into pit. With just 5 laps to go, comes in on soft tires and takes the fastest lap from Lando on the soft tires. And was this the second time in 3 races we've seen RV car try and take the fastest lap from a McLaren?
Yeah. Danny did it, didn't he, in his last race? It seems to be, it's definitely become a bit of a pattern, isn't it? People coming in at the bottom end of the pack, putting on soft tires and trying to take the fastest lap, even so to take away a point because they're not going to get it. Because you only
it's only V-Carb that are doing that. Williams are doing it.
So Perez came in Perez came in as well on his second to last lap because he already been lapped. He came in lap 68
and he didn't even get it.
That's
how I was going to bring this up when we got to the losers, because I'm reading your outline and you talk about how Charles on the last lap he did pit, he got the fastest lap.
Yes, Checo did
too, and he didn't.
He didn't.
Yeah. Just to cap off the worst weekend that you could possibly wish to have.
In last place and finished in last place, essentially.
Essentially, yeah. Except for the DNFs, yeah. But. Yeah, Leclerc got he had time to pit in front of the Mercedes and got that point.
Yeah.
Is there an argument to be made for giving more points to fastest lap or expanding?
Yeah. Let's ask the FIA, shall we? Oh wait, what's happening next year?
Yeah. It's gone. It's gone.
Oh, it's gone?
It's gone next year.
I didn't know that. I was going the other way.
Oh. That give 10 points to the fastest lap.
it makes it a lot easier. I'll put on my Coupes F1 hat for a second. It makes it a lot easier to score Coupes F1 because there's been points for fastest lap in Coupes F1 for years, the last 15 years. And it used to be quite hard to work out who got it because nobody was that interested.
Right.
This has made it a lot easier.
Yeah, F you, Martin. Yeah, you're going to have to go digging again.
I'm going to have to go digging again.
But yeah, that is really it for this race. Carlos, for the first time in his career, taking 2 race wins in the same season.
And that makes it 6 drivers this year that have multiple race wins.
Yeah, it's great.
Wow.
And it was, awesome. I mean, it was a bit like last week with Charles winning in the US. Like, didn't see much of Carlos, right? Once he got into the lead, that was the last you saw of him.
Yeah.
And that's the first time since 1982 that there have been 6 multiple race winners during a single season.
Wow.
Is that the
one of them was Gilles Villeneuve
championship?
1982. That's before I remember my time.
That was 3.
82, the champion that year was Niki Lauda. 85, I think, was Keke Rosberg.
Wow.
Well, Gilles Villeneuve won 2 races that year.
This season has been absolutely like a tale of 2 halves, hasn't it? The beginning of the season was just max domination. We had the one Lando win in Miami, right? His maiden victory. It was just max domination.
And Carlos in Australia, you know, that was obviously the DNF for Max.
Yeah.
But Max won 7 out of the first 8.
And then since then, like, yeah, Max has just dropped off and everybody's just been scrapping like crazy. So long may it continue. It's definitely making for much more interesting racing.
Kiki yeah, did win in 82.
Was it right?
No.
Well, no, don't check me on that. Seriously?
I thought so. I was very sure.
What?
Because he didn't win until the very last race, right?
You've been watching stuff more recently than I have.
At least that's what Wikipedia says. It's not always correct, but that's what it says. So yeah, winners and losers on the weekend. I mean, obviously, Ferrari and the pace that they're in, and Carlos, potentially his last race win at Ferrari, but with the way things are going, who knows? I mean, could he get another
really
one?
Strong. Who, Carlos?
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. Why not? There's more races to go. I mean, anybody can win at the moment. It's
Ferrari
great.
Was strong in Vegas last year, right?
Or am I crazy? Until
Michelle.
Was it the manhole cover last year?
That took science out. And Verstappen won, and Charles overtook Checo on the final, not the final corner,
that's
but
right.
the final proper corner, just coming down by the Cosmopolitan to take a left on the last lap to take second. So they're very competitive. I think that relatively where Red Bull were this time last year and Ferrari, I'd have to give Vegas as a thumbs up to Ferrari this time out. We've got Brazil between now and then,
Brazil this weekend.
Just, you know, I don't know who's going to be quickest on that one.
Yeah.
Max is always
sprint race too.
Shown. Now, I forgot two. Is Qatar a sprint race as well?
Oh, is it?
Man, I'm not sure which one, but there are two left.
Then I think it is Qatar, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so
there's
lots of points left. Lando is 47 points behind Max with four races to go, which means he needs 12 points per weekend to make it happen. I think this weekend is probably the only week. Actually, no, Australia, he finished third and Max didn't finish. So that was a 15 point gain that Lando had over Max that weekend. But I think this is probably the only other double digit gain that Lando's made over Max. So in reality, Max has to have a DNF.
Yeah.
For it to go to a point where Lando's really with a chance on the championship.
Yeah.
But
it's more likely that we'll be saying, to be honest, it's more likely that we'll be saying that how many more points does Max need and he secures the championship? Will it even go to the last race of the season? We'll see. But yeah, probably won't.
Don't say that.
I just want it to be less than 25 points when they're on the grid in Abu Dhabi.
Yeah. Then Oscar just has to crash into Max. That's all we need.
Exactly.
I'm not saying that. You're saying that.
All right, Flavio.
just lose it by accident, you know, right near him. But winner, you still got to put Lando as a winner, making up spots, just like you said. And then Haas with another double points finishing weekend. I mean, Io has really changed this whole team around. I mean, we all loved Gunther, but it didn't seem like he knew anything about how the actual cars worked. And now that they have someone that actually does
this
know
year's
that,
car was built last year, well. Jason. I'm going to stand up for my buddy Gunther here.
Yeah, but it was all
this year's
Io
car was built last year. But one thing I will say is about Io is that the one thing that they struggled with was in-season development.
Yeah.
And that's one thing that they have not suffered with this year. So clearly, Ayao's unlocked something between the different centers of, you know, Kannapolis, wherever it is in England, and Maranello, to be able to actually get things moving. So I think that's a really encouraging sign for the future for Haas. I mean, it's taken Haas, you know, Haas have maximized what they have, when in reality, VCarb, Aston Martin, Williams should be doing better than they are.
Yeah.
But that's the great thing about what he's done, is that he's taken the smallest budget on the grid and made it work and found ways to kind of overcome the challenges that they've had over the last couple of years.
Well, think about the return on the investment, like the smallest budget on the grid, and they're now sixth, right?
Yeah.
Like, yeah. How much more money do they earn for sixth place versus 10th place last year? Like tens of millions of dollars.
Yeah. Well, they're to be that you didn't get anything for 10th.
Oh, right. Right? No, it was 11th. That was when there was 11 teams, wasn't there?
There used to be, there were 10, 11, 12, I think you may be right. I mean, but I think it was if you finished last in money, in and prior then 11th years,
was, you got nothing.
Okay. Yeah. But it was like, you got nothing. And, but the thing is though, as much as I like, huge kudos to Ayo Komatsu for what he's done and what good to put in place for him to do it. Big up our buddy Gunter. Is that, do you want to see Gene Haas get the return on the investment, knowing that the biggest thing that stood in their way for the last 3, 4, 5 years is that Gene has refused to invest in any way to make the team better? Gunther has to go out. I mean, obviously he had to go out to get sponsors. He was running the team, but that MoneyGram deal was what brought the money in to make them move up that next notch. There's this Toyota deal that was announced like a week or two ago. Granted, it's not Toyota coming back in, but it's definitely a resourcing sharing agreement with Toyota is what's going to bring them like the next stage. So great. Gene wants to find other ways to get income in and get better, but he's not putting any of his own money in. So
yeah, fair.
I mean, it's super smart that he's making a ton of money off of it, but it's like, I'd rather he was investing to get that more money out. But yeah, you know, he's getting,
but he did make the initial investment, right?
He did. Yeah. Yeah. He trusted in the vision.
Yeah. But it's still great for them and another fantastic weekend. And then on to the losers. I mean, the only losers you can really give are anything related to Red Bull, right?
Especially Checo.
Yeah. I mean, Max lost out in points to Lando. Checo had potentially the worst race weekend he's ever had, definitely at Red Bull, definitely the worst weekend he's had at Red Bull. RB looked like they would be strong all weekend. Yuki was looking good and then ends up crashing out on lap one. Liam with damage towards the end of the race has to pit and go to the back of the lead, or Checo is the only one that placed lower than him that actually finished the race.
Yeah, I mean, it sucks for Checo because it's his home race. And, you know, I think back to when Checo was on the podium and he'd got his little boy there and his dad was in tears. And it was, you know, one of the highlights of his entire career. And then at a time when it's really increasingly looking like Checo's going to be out of F1, he has the worst weekend probably of his career at his home race. It's really sad.
Yeah, it was pretty bad.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I guess that takes us into Coop's F1, Martin.
Oh, yeah. I mean, people still struggling for points, you know, with it being as competitive as it is, hard to, you know, get some of those big point scores that we're seeing earlier on in the season. But Tlockhart with 265 points this week was the biggest scorer, with Pepe 1965 and B. Wheeler behind them. Overall, still the same two up front. R. Heatley, just over 4,000 points, and prancing to first. Mark, you're right behind him. Have you closed the gap a little bit?
I did. Think?
Yeah,
40 more second. Points.
Nice. Yeah.
So you've only got 60 points differential over the next few races. That's definitely doable.
Yeah.
I think I had an all right race this week, but Nick, you're up to 27th.
I had an
26th equal, I like to say, because I'm
Oh, right.
Same number of points of with Jonathan, and also below me.
Also 28th equal W. As well.
Man, it's really tight in the midfield.
Yeah, and you got over the robot.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I was actually looking at that. Consensus. To be above the prediction consensus, because last year won or got third?
It came third prediction consensus. But last year was much, the points were just higher.
It was
all
much more
last
predictable,
year.
Right?
You know, just much more predictable, wasn't it? Right.
This was the first week that I have moved down in the rankings in a long time.
All right. Yeah. Yeah. You've made a massive recovery. Yeah. I'm still trying to get into the top 100. I actually did go up a few spots this week. I'm in 112th, but still all to play for. We'll see what's happened. I mean, our Heatley's done it before. Well, they came third.
Is that a bronze or a gold? That's a bronze.
Bronze. They came third last year, but
but also, dude, I mean, how many players are actually active? Because, you know, this, what, 300 or so that are signed up, and some are playing and some are probably not. But, you know, it's really testament to what you've set up, Martin, that, you know, it's getting out there and we have hundreds of people playing. And so the fact that Martin Cooper, the founder of Coops F1, after whom it is named, is mediocre compared to us punters is really a testament to what you've put out there, dude.
You would all be crying foul if I was at the top of the charts. quite rightly, to be honest.
It's a ruse. You're going to come back strong next year.
Oh, yes. Well, look at all these points I just found. Yeah. All in good fun. I'm pulling for you, Mark, but no favors from me.
Okay, fair enough.
You have to, if it becomes close at the end, you have to do what I did last year and just go balls to the wall. And
it didn't work out. Spoiler alert, it didn't work out for him.
No, it didn't.
He spun out at the first corner.
Max. Yeah,
exactly. He has to give up the corner ahead to nose ahead. What is wrong with these people?
Thanks for listening to the Undercut's review of the 2024 Mexican Grand Prix. Please rate, review, and subscribe wherever you listen, and join us next time for our review of the 2024 Brazilian Grand Prix Sprint Weekend. See you there.